Hi, everyone. How's it going? I am Dan Armendariz. This is Dino, and we have been working this summer, and actually, I've been working for a bit longer on a replacement for the CS50 appliance. Has everyone here used the appliance? Is there anyone who has not used it?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is sort of like the appliance 2.0, and what we are attempting to do here is a variety of things. The main idea is to take the appliance, which is a virtual machine that you download, wait a considerable amount of time, install, and use up a lot of resources on your computer, and push it to the cloud. And so it is essentially as if you are writing code in a Google Docs sort of fashion, in that it is a document, essentially, and really it's just a workspace, where you can create programs, you can write programs, and you can actually collaborate on those same programs with other people. The collaboration aspect is fully optional. You can make it a fully private workspace that only you have access to if you want. But it is also meant to be a full replacement for the appliance in many ways, except one very important difference. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So the workspace looks like this, basically. This is something that you can access now, but what we are going to show you today are features that we have worked on over the summer and are not yet publicly available. So for now, it will only be privately available on this demo, but very soon, hopefully in the next week, will we start pushing these updates to the public one as well. And certainly by the fall, all of these updates will get pushed to the live version that we're going to use. If you are interested in using this, you can use you can sign up for CS50X on edX and go to this address, cs50.io/auth/CS50, and I will zoom in on this so you can see it. cs50.io/auth/CS50, and this will bring you to a page asking you for your edX credentials. Once you have properly authenticated, it will send you back to cs50.io, where you'll have the opportunity to create a workspace. Now, I've used this term before, but essentially, essentially a workspace is a computer in the cloud. And it is an Ubuntu instance that is running on Docker. It's essentially like a virtual machine, but there are some differences that we don't really have to discuss right now. It is essentially a virtual machine of Ubuntu, the same version that you're used to using on the appliance that's running in the cloud, and you have full control over that instance. You can run terminal commands at the bottom of that instance. You have a full integrated development environment, including an editor that you can use in your web browser. And the neat thing about this is that it, frankly, one of the things that I really like about this over using the appliance is that because it works in the browser, copy-paste just works. You don't have to worry about copy-pasting between your computer in an email, for example, and the appliance. This works completely within the within this web browser. So down here, we can see we have full terminal prompts. We can do an ls and see everything that's in the contents of this folder. We do also have root access if we want, and we can manipulate the entirety of this computer. So everything that is present in the appliance is also present in the IDE, including all of the tools necessary to compile and debug the programs that you are actually going to write. But I want to point out a couple of other things about the IDE before we sort of move into a demo. That is, the overall look of it is you have a set of files contained within your workspace. Right now I have created this workspace called a burner because I frequently am deleting workspaces and creating new ones, so it's just a burner space. And I have here just some files. This one doesn't really matter. This was like our update 50, essentially, that's not yet made public, but I installed it so I'll be able to show you those files. And it includes a README. And the README will have information about its usage and these sorts of things. But these are all of the files that we have within this workspace. You can have entire projects. Generally, what we're going to recommend is you have one workspace essentially for the entirety of the year. So all of the problem sets you can complete within this workspace, except for problem set 3. Problem set 3 requires the appliance. I'll talk a little bit more, that in a, more about that in just a little bit. This is powered by a product from a company called Cloud9. And they have done amazing things with this editor. It is a full editor written in JavaScript that runs in your browser, but it is much faster and much better than you probably expect it will be. They've done a really fantastic job with it. They've worked on it for 5 years, and it is a really, really nice, really good, really solid editor, assuming that you have a modern enough web browser that can actually run it. IE users might be a little sad. Older IE users might be a little sad. But there are hopefully some obvious benefits to this. For those of you that come from districts that require, that have very locked down computers, it's difficult for you to install things. Or for those of you that come from districts where students are using Chromebooks, these students will now be able to use the same development environment that everyone else will be using. So this is going to be a net win for those of you in that particular situation. So I want to also show a couple of other things about this. We are going to create, how's best to do this? Now let's actually show the collaborative portion of this. I think this is one of the neatest things about this. So Dino here has a Cloud9 account of his own. Let's just sort of pretend that he is a student and he is working on a problem or on a problem set and wants to try to share that with me. Rather than sending me code back and forth over email or posting that code directly in a message board, it's actually possible for him to share his workspace with me. Now, this actually implies something very important about the workspaces, which is that their default settings will be, by default, private, which means that the workspace itself cannot be accessed by anyone else. If you are running a web server on this workspace, as you would be for problem set 7, 6, 7, or 8, it's not made publicly available to anyone else except those that have access to the preview application of this workspace. And that is very important. So here, this is private only to me, only I have access to this. If you were to go to these URLs here, you would not be allowed access to this. So this is a way that we are able to isolate individual students from each other. But do keep in mind that it is very easy for them to share access with other people. There is an invite option at the bottom here, and all they have to type in is their Cloud9 username or their email address associated with that account and be able to share that workspace with others. It's also very easy to make this public just by checking the little public box that's contained to the right of each of these URLs. So Dino is working on a private workspace right now, and he's actually decided to share that workspace with me because he is working on a program and maybe wants to get a little bit of help or have me help him or look at that at the code that's contained within. And it's very easy for me to do so. I can go to my cs50.io account, and it will take me to my dashboard, which contains a list of all of my workspaces. By default, like I mentioned before, it's best to have one workspace for all of these, for all of the problem sets that you're working on. Cloud9 is providing accounts that, by default and for free, have one private workspace. If you create additional workspaces, which you're free to do, they will be by default public. And in order to make them private, you'd have to pay money, which is great if you're a developer. But as a student, we just want all of them to have one single private workspace, which fits well within this model that they're using. Anyway, we can see the workspaces that I have here. I have my one temporary burner workspace that you saw a preview of. But also on the left, we can see that I have workspaces that were shared with me. And if I click on that, I see that I have one here from Dino. Now I can open this, and on his computer, he also has this same workspace open. And this is essentially, like I said, an analog of Google Docs in a programming environment. So there's a couple of things that are neat about this. One is that we actually have shared terminal screens here. So if you were to type a command, I actually would see that on my screen. Are you typing in the terminal? Yeah. Might need to do it. Oh, it looks like you disconnected. There it is. So here we can see that he's typing some commands, and I'll be able to help troubleshoot with that. And now if you were to start editing the document, which he's actually done, it actually does in a very Google-like way, Google Docs-like way, shared collaboration on each of these projects. So as he's typing stuff, I can actually make some changes and say, well, maybe you don't really want to have this here. And it also highlights the changes based on color, so that it becomes very easy to tell who has made which changes to a particular document. So this is not only useful in a teacher-student context, but also in a pair programming context, or for other ways where students actually want to work on a single project and have multiple students working on a single workspace, this enables all of that functionality. And it is possible for him to do that through sharing this. Pretty cool, right? So far, so good. We've taken it a step further, though.
Can you share with everyone?
I'm sorry? No, you can share. We have found the maximum number of people that can open a workspace at once is probably around 4. It will allow more, but it uses resources on the individual workspace, and it will eventually start causing problems if it runs out of memory or the like. To be a little bit more concrete, you can find out the statistics, some information on your workspace just by clicking on the information panel in the far upper right. We can see that this workspace has 512 megabytes of RAM and a gigabyte of hard disk space. And every additional collaborative user that you have uses between 50 and 60 additional megabytes of RAM. So as soon as you get about 10 people, it will start to use up all of the memory. And Cloud9 is very aggressive about killing processes that are using too much memory. So that's just a little technical behind-the-scenes work there, behind-the-scenes information about that, but I would say about 4 people is the maximum at any one given time, though you can share with more people if you want. So we've tried to take this a step further, and relying on Cloud9's really excellent GUI front end, we have created a connector from the GDB debugger to a GUI-based debugger that we have here as well. Let me bring that up here. So this is a separate workspace. Right now, we actually have an early version, a version 1 of this GDB debugger available publicly on Cloud9. You can just create a Cloud9 account and actually see our first version of that plugin. But actually, thanks to Dino's help, he helped me do some like really deliberate testing and some really deliberate troubleshooting. We have vastly changed the experience and made it much improved, but that won't go live for maybe another couple of weeks. So what I'm going to show you now is the version that is new and much improved. So don't be too afraid if you use the existing one and realize that it doesn't look quite the same or doesn't behave quite the same as the one that I'm about to demo. So in this case, I have this C program that Dino wrote for us. And if I want to debug it, all I have to do is I could go into my terminal window and type make or type clang and then actually execute the program as we've done before, or I can also use GDB and debug it as we've done before. But I can also hit the debug button here, and it will do those things for me. It will actually make that application, and then it will bring up a GUI-based GDB debugger, which shows a lot of information. It shows all of the variables contained within a function. In fact, it shows if you have multiple functions, the entire stack. You can click on individual functions and see all of the variables contained there. It allows you to set breakpoints very easily by clicking on left to the line number and setting a breakpoint. And you can then inspect elements in this way. So here we have created a couple of kind of crazy multi-dimensional arrays. And this version does actually allow you to bury down into each of the arrays and see all of the values contained within, and it will update as appropriate. There's also a lot of other kind of neat features about this. You can actually double-click on any value that's contained within the variable list and change its value, so you can actually modify the execution of the program in line. It will actually change that. You can hover over individual elements, and it will evaluate those in place, and you can actually see the evaluation of that element in the current context within the current frame. So there's a lot of features that that we're excited about and really lowering the bar to debugging for students, especially. So using the command line debugger might have been an exercise in frustration for early users, and hopefully this will at least get them started with the right ideas in this. Now, I do want to set some expectations. We have not replicated all of the functionality of GDB in this GUI revision. There's a lot of things that GDB can do that we just do not have a GUI representation for, like watch points or breakpoints that are only temporary. You can have them. You know, you can have countered breakpoints and a variety of other things that we just cannot do in this case. But we're doing the best we can with the GUI that we have provided here, and you should be able to easily perform simple tasks like stepping over, stepping in, stepping out, and all of the other sort of basic debugging tasks that you would want to do. So I would say that this is meant not so much as a replacement for the command line version of GDB, but instead an introduction to it, and show them that it's very possible and very easy to use. But as soon as their programs start becoming extremely complicated, you're probably going to have to use some combination of GDB and Valgrind. Valgrind has no GUI representation here. And perhaps use some of the more advanced steps in GDB there as well. Dino, what is your... So Dino came in early this summer, and I kind of just showed him this and asked him to sort of help me work on it. And what was your impression of this?
So at the very beginning of the summer, if I remember, the first post was... I've sorted out a lot of things. How about you knock on it and tell me what you think? And it was at a very, very different place than it is now. But I think this is pretty huge, actually. Coming from experience, I took CS50 in the fall, and a lot of my friends that took the class too, they really didn't use GDB as much as they should have or could have, just because it wasn't that it was very complicated, it just didn't seem as accessible. And this graphical user interface for it is really gonna encourage some students to debug with GDB, and it's really amazing because being able to kind of see everything at once, rather than having to ask the computer to show you variables or show you what's going on, is a pretty big deal when you're debugging, and it's really gonna be really helpful for some of the more complex functions or problems that students are gonna be dealing with. So I think it's a pretty big accomplishment on Dan's part.
Oh, thanks. I wasn't fishing, though. So there's a couple of other things that I do want to mention. Because this is cloud-based, you can tell that there's no GUI related to the underlying Ubuntu instance itself. And this is the major change from the appliance, which means that problem set 3 breakout can no longer function in this with this system. So fingers crossed, all our direction right now is to use this for the fall. And assuming that we have no major deal breakers or anything doesn't suddenly go south, we probably will have to go ahead. But that means that the problem set 3 that you're familiar with now will have to change in some sort of dramatic way. I don't think we have any information on that quite yet, but you might be able to I'm sure you'll see that as soon as we know more information on that. But if you decide to use this in your class and you do want the students to complete problem set 3 as shown in the 2014 version of the class, you will need to use the appliance for that. So just keep that in mind when we're working on this, and that using the SPL library, specifically the SPL library, because it provides an API for creating an actual GUI window in Ubuntu, and that's no longer possible in this case. We've considered some options to try to enable it, but there's no good way to do it. So unfortunately, it's just not going to be possible at this time. One more thing that I want to mention is that we do have full capability of creating a web server like Apache and doing problem set 6 through 8, the web server problem set, the mashup, and CS50 finance. But this is perhaps one of the ways that is going to diverge the most from the existing appliance. So what I am doing here is, in another workspace, is I am just creating a simple problem set 7 folder where I have created an index.html file. And I'm going to start Apache. Oh, cool. And I will see if I can preview this. It's because I have a private workspace. Let me make this public so I can actually preview this correctly. Yep. And, okay. Here, while this is resetting its permissions, here I've essentially created an Apache web server pointing to a particular pointing to a particular directory. And this is something that's new in this version of the IDE compared to the appliance, is that we will have an Apache 50 command that actually starts Apache and points it to some specific directory, as opposed to the appliance where Apache is always running. Users open Chrome within the appliance, go to HTTP pset 7 or pset 8 and load the problem set that way. Students will have to have a direct intervention to direct Apache at either pset 7 or pset 8. But this essentially goes through a proxy that Cloud9 has created. And what that means is that it will give me a host name for this workspace. In this case, it's burner-myusername.c9.io. And when I visit that, it will load Apache through some roundabout mechanism using this proxy. Now, the reason that the proxy has to be there is because of this authentication mechanism. In order for these workspaces to actually be private, in order for us to actually enforce the fact that some users can preview this web server and some cannot, it must go through Cloud9 in order to determine whether or not they have actually logged in successfully. So this has an important impact on this mental model for the server that's contained within this workspace. And that is that the server is operating off port 8080, because that is where the proxy directs. But I have just visited a standard web page. And in this case, it is going to be an HTTPS web page. And broken. It's an HTTPS page that obviously operates off 443. So in the appliance, it was perhaps a slightly simpler mental model to say, okay, we have this web server that's running on port 80. You can only access it within the appliance and perhaps within your host computer as well. But in this case, we have to change the description slightly so that students understand that it is operating behind a proxy. So for problem set 6, where I think we will have the biggest issues with this sort of differentiation between the IDE and the appliance, it will be very important to, as students are creating their server, to operate it off port 8080 and try to connect to it locally inside of the workspace. So in other words, to use the Telnet application and actually connect to the local host that way. It is totally plausible to connect to it externally, but you have to connect through the proxy. And simply all you have to do is you can still use Telnet on your local computer, but you just have to provide it the host header, which tells it which workspace is actually the one that's in use. But other than that, everything else is already supported. We are going to have a couple of new commands, including username 50 and password 50, which are going to be the username and password for PHP MyAdmin. I'm not too concerned about about showing these credentials, because they're specific to this burner workspace that I fully intend to delete after this actually happens. But my MySQL instance on this workspace is accessed using these commands. And you'll also be able to find that in our statistics dialog box, which Dino did a lot of work on. This is the older version, but the newer version also contains the MySQL username and password there for students to see as well. Yes?
What would you lose if you chose to just use some other IDE where you can write C, C++ programs?
So our goal in providing this experience is that everything is unified, that all of the commands will be the same in all of the instructions that we provide. So it doesn't matter who is using the Cloud9 interface, but all of the commands will always be the same. So for example, these commands, hostname 50, password 50, won't be available if you were to use some arbitrary IDE. And they also wouldn't be available if you just used the Cloud9 custom template that did not include these CS50 appliance, that did not include these CS50 workspace. So in Cloud9, when you create a new account and you create a new workspace, when you've logged in via this edX mechanism, you can actually create a CS50 specific workspace. And that is only enabled through this current edX mechanism, and that won't be available through other IDEs. So if you want to ensure that the tool chain is all the same, we're all using the same version of Clang and all of the libraries are the same, and that we have troubleshooted all of these bugs in advance of actually releasing the problem set, then you would want to use the IDE. But otherwise, you're totally free to use any IDE or any cloud-based online environment that you want. You may just have to modify the instructions accordingly. So,
dependable always.
So, if
and our school has an issue with students creating logins at places, you have to get it okay through the whole county for them to create a login. So, with the appliance, at least it was something local, albeit a slow installation and a tedious installation. At least it was.
So, there's two things for me to address there. One is the possibility of unpredictable internet, and my response to that is that the vast majority of the GDB plugin that you saw I developed on a plane a few times that I've, and if you've ever been on a plane and used the Wi-Fi, you know that that is notoriously bad. And it's worked just fine. Cloud9, the company, has done a fantastic job of allowing for disconnects, and when the computer, when the workspace reconnects to the GUI, then it syncs up all of that information and it still continues to function just as you would expect. However, of course, it is a cloud-based experience, and so if the internet does go down entirely, then there will be issues. So I want to reassure that it's maybe not as bad as I expected, but yes, that is a very valid concern. The other is the login issue. Right now, it's only enabled through edX to create these new CS50 accounts. I don't actually know what sort of special login system we will have related to CS50 AP. I would have to defer to David for any information on that. But I imagine that we're not going to require your students to create edX accounts only to access this. Maybe that's true or not true?
Yes, we would use edX accounts as the official account by which to access content.
The mic.
Do you want to mention CS50 Appliance 2015 and the offline IDE?
That is an important point, is that we also are making concurrently a totally offline version of this IDE that you can download and run locally. It is not exactly like the appliance because although it is contained within an appliance, you still connect to it using your local browser. However, you're just connecting to your local host. And all of the same functionality will exist in each of those cases. The downside to using that are somewhat mimicked to the appliance, is that you have a big initial download. It will be about 2 gigs probably. And it will also be a little bit harder to get updates. Whenever we provide updates to plugins through Cloud9, all of that is automatically given to everyone. But you will have to actually run Update 50 in order to get the latest version of all of those on the offline version. However, Update 50 will work in each of these cases, online and offline, to update those versions. And we have also, just as realizing that this is a transition period, we have also created a 2015 version of the appliance. So if it is really not suitable for your particular environment to use Cloud9, then you can continue to download and use the appliance for the upcoming year. Yes? The differences between the templates are really the initial packages that are installed. It's meant to make it a little bit easier to get off the ground for projects related to some of the templates that you see here. But frankly, I have started every project with just a custom template and then installed the packages that I needed as necessary. That's really all it's meant to be. So, perhaps the CS51 is a good example because it has pre-installed all of these packages that we expect in CS50. And in this case, in the CS50 case, which is unique among all the templates, we also have certain plugins that are available only to the CS50 workspaces. One of the plugins that Dino helped work on is this one called Simple, which essentially allows us to simplify the menu options at the top of the Cloud9 environment. However, once students become a little bit more advanced, we can make it for more comfortable and increase the number of features that actually exist within the IDE. So this is an example of a plugin that's available only through the CS50 template, but again, that is sort of unique, is that the other Cloud9 templates are identical except for the underlying packages installed on the instance.
This is going to be a stupid question, and I apologize. But if you're writing HTML and PHP, you're doing web design through this, where do you upload your files, or do you not have to? You can actually just upload them, or they're here, and then you can access the web page via some domain.
That's exactly right. You can work on the files here locally on or within the editor that's contained here. You can also very easily upload and download files or even the entire project within Cloud9 by using the file menu. There's an upload local files option that allows you to quickly and easily click and drag files from your desktop into the Cloud9 workspace, and also download individual files as well just by simply right-clicking them and selecting a download option. And once they are within the Cloud9 workspace, then you can run Apache as you would normally expect, and provided you go to the URL that's contained within the top of the workspace here, in the case of a CS50 environment, then you will be able to see the preview of that page.
That's not live, though. That's actually, it is live.
It is live,
so
yes.
Can anyone do that, even if you set it up as private in the beginning, or no?
Can anyone do that? What do you mean by anyone?
Yes
and no. Yes, if it is a public, if you've made this publicly accessible. By default, they should not be public, but here I have made the preview public, which in this case would make, oh, that's why. I clicked the wrong button. There we go. You make the application public, and now when I go to that that page, I can see, well, it's blank, but this is the index.html page that I generated there.
And you can create a whole bunch in subfolders and basically have your own web
page. You can have your own web page, that's right. Yeah.
Is there a limit on the amount of pages you can create or space?
So the workspace has a maximum capacity of 1 gigabyte unless you pay for a premium account, in which case you can upgrade the size of the space. So yes, this could be a quote unquote poor man's hosting solution if you wanted to do that. It is. It is a very good sandbox, and it's a very good way of...
Go to GoDaddy and buy your domain and stuff over there.
Right, that's right. It's a very good way of previewing your application and making it possible. In fact, the way that Dino and I were able to work on these was we worked in one workspace, and then we just made a preview of it, and we were able to both look at that preview at the same time without having to share files with each other. I think I saw another question. Yes? Cloud9 does do, that's right. So you do not have access to the workspace unless they explicitly share access to that workspace with you. That would be very similar to the appliance, where you wouldn't have access to that appliance unless they shared their computer with you. Cloud9 does have some protections. I'm not privy exactly to what exactly they are, but I know that, for example, SMTP outgoing mail, for example, is limited only to Google servers. So you have to use your Gmail account in order to send mail outgoing, which means that for Problemset 7, it still is possible to send emails, but you have to configure it in a different way, and we will document all of those changes. But that's just meant to be an example of ways that they're trying to limit abuse from workspaces that people use in Cloud9. They probably do some sort of network rate limiting. They might cut it off if you're doing some very obvious denial of service attack or something like that. I don't know exactly what those limits are or cutoffs are. However, I've never found a problem in just normal usage. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
So at our school, we have like a Google Doc that's closed. So the students can only share with people that are staff or other students.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to stop using like a Turnitin because they weren't able to create like a bubble that would like shelter the students.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, is there any way to create kind of the bubble, or is it open for them to invite to another?
Not at this time. Right now, it's open to anyone with a Cloud9 username. But we will make note of that to talk to them about it. I wouldn't expect that that feature for at least a year if they were interested in doing that. I do know that one of the things they're interested in is the concept of organizations, and I would imagine that with that concept we would get this idea, but that is not done yet. Yes? I think one of the workarounds now that may not be sufficient for your school in the long term, but maybe at least initially, would be that as part of their first assignment, when they're first introduced to Cloud9, they explicitly share the workspace with you as part of like problem set zero in order for you to consider that assignment to be complete. That would certainly be a viable way of making sure that you also have access to that workspace from the onset. However, the bubble concern is a valid one. Other questions? Great. Okay, well, thank you all so much. We hope you will get a chance to try it and enjoy.